I wanted to say a quick hello to everybody who came. I really appreciate it, of course. And a huge shout out to Jason Hutton, who's sitting in the front here, for putting on the Toronto Timepiece Show and, of course, all the brands. We have a fun sort of different format for the episode today, but keeping in that, this is also the first live taping we've ever done in Toronto. I wanted to bring in a special guest of mine, my mother, Betty Ann Stacey, to intro the show.
Welcome to another episode of The Grey NATO, a loose discussion of travel, adventure, diving, driving, gear, and most certainly watches. This is episode 302, recorded live at the Toronto Timepiece Show, and it's proudly brought to you by the always growing TGN supporter crew. We thank you all so much for your continued support, and if you'd like to support the show, please visit thegreynato.com for more details.
Thank you so much, Mo. You can see where I get my broadcasting skills. That was one try. One take. I couldn't be more proud. Thank you so much, Mom. That was great. Well, look, this is going to be kind of like a TGN and Friends episode. We're going to call up a bunch of people. And if you're a frequent listener to the show, some of these folks you'll know, some of them you won't. But we're going to kick it off with the guy who made today possible. Jason Hutton, please come to the stage. Check it out. Hi, my friend.
Full house in here. This is awesome.
Yeah, we're pumped. This is great. Yeah. From Jason and I, just to start off really quick, just a big thank you. We started talking about doing this over a year ago. And as I think I said on just a recent episode, I didn't necessarily believe this could be done. And I definitely didn't believe it could be done to this level.
Thank you.
It's really been nice.
It's been a long journey. There's been a tremendous amount of people, local community, who've been super supportive. Jason and James, of course, are a big part of that. Every time there's a mention of the Toronto Timepiece Show on their podcast, I would see my traffic go flying up and a whole bunch of people register for tickets. So, you know, they're connected to a great crowd. And when I created the show initially about a year and a half ago when I started it, I really wanted to create an atmosphere which was just very welcoming and all comers in the watch community. Everybody likes different things. And I really wanted everyone who had any interest in watches to feel very comfortable to come to the show. And that's really been my big driving force. And, you know, James was super helpful at the beginning, not only with some introductions, but really just giving me ideas about how to create a really meaningful show. So thank you, both of you.
Thank you. And I'm just curious, like, what was kind of the kernel of the idea? Where did that come from? What was your inspiration? Had you attended Wind Up or some of these other shows and thought we can do this here?
I'm just thinking here how to answer this diplomatically.
I've been to just us
and everybody listening. So I've been to a number of shows and the shows are great. And, you know, I've done a lot of events in my past career. And as a brand owner as well, I've attended these shows and I've seen, you know, what works really well and what doesn't. Certainly we had nothing like it in Canada. And my prime driver was I just wanted to bring this to the community. And I thought, right in mind or not, I don't know. I decided to go and do it. I remember a little over a year ago when I came here to the Courtyard Marriott and I was talking with the event planner and I looked through about maybe 20 different facilities and I found this one was kind of the best balance of what I wanted. And I went and I said, you know what? Let's rent it. So I put the deposit down on my credit card, which was sizable enough. At that time, I had spoken to folks like James and other members of the community. I hadn't actually spoken to a single brand. So I was like, I'm going to make this happen, though. And I went home. And I think on the way home, I started panicking a little bit. And I was like, oh, crap, what have I done? And I literally sat myself in front of the computer for about 6 or 7 hours and started hammering out emails and reaching out to people and just saying, okay, I got to make this happen. And I was relentless. I just didn't stop. Other folks helped me with intros and it just started to build momentum over time. And then we had different folks come on board. The first brand that came on board was a local brand, Lock & King. Ryan Moran, great guy. He didn't even look at the price. He just said, I'm going to support you. I want to be the first one. And then Circula from Germany came on board and some others. And Christopher Ward was one of the larger brands that came on board pretty early. And I think when Christopher Ward came on board, that's when the show kind of felt real because I was like, wow, brand like Christopher Ward, they're willing to come to Toronto. They're going to trust and put their faith in me and the community here is going to be a great show. And that was the start of it. It's just been a nonstop ride ever since. And it's been amazing. It's been amazing.
I'm curious, like, it seems like there's a really robust watch enthusiast community in Canada that I've seen some good Red Bar groups and local meetups and things. And we have a good audience in Canada, of course, certain reasons, I'm sure. One of your own. But I'm curious, like, why do you think a show like this hasn't happened in Canada before this?
It's probably has to do with a number of factors. One, I think you have to be a little crazy to kind of take it on and say, I'm going to do this on my own. But I think the other part too is when you are putting something together, you really have to have that passion and that drive to make it happen. My goal with the show has always been, I didn't want to like go broke basically, but I wanted to make sure the first year was an absolute, hopefully knock it out of the park experience for attendees and for brands. I feel like we've done that probably in the first year so far. We still got tomorrow to go, but couldn't ask for a better brand mix. The audience has been amazing. It's been really heartwarming for me because I've been throughout the show, people recognize my face from the reels and other things I've been involved with. And they're like, Jason, I want to come up and thank you for what you've done. And it's an amazing, amazing feeling. So
that's great.
It's great. Congratulations. It's a huge lift. Yeah.
And I think like certainly from my perspective, just very proud that this is in Toronto, that it's in Canada, that it's very grassroots. Like watches can be all on their own a barrier to entry, and there's nothing of that going on here. And I think that's kind of what we were all hoping for, was just a really good place to hang out and see watches.
And that's very intentional. And you know, that's what I want to create, the experience for everyone. I think it's been incredible, and the community has been incredibly supportive. I couldn't have done this without everyone helping out, providing introductions, being supportive during the show. I mean, it's been absolutely amazing with the Instagram accounts and social media. It's been, I'm being tagged and story shared and collaboration requests, and I can't even keep on top of it. It's like hundreds and hundreds of notifications, and I haven't really experienced that before. So it's been, I promise I'll catch up eventually, but it's probably not going to be for a few days yet. So it's been absolutely amazing. And like I say, it's just been such a pleasure, and seeing people laughing and having a great time and brands connecting with the community here, which is really so important. And I think it's important to help grow the community here and just, you know, have the opportunity to handle the watches and just, and I love it. I love it.
But I don't want to keep you too long. You're a busy guy. This is a very busy day for you. So I appreciate you carving out a few minutes for us here, but let's end on a future, a forward looking note. We've got Vancouver coming up.
Absolutely. So that's happening April 25th and 27th, 2025.
It's a great city, guys.
Tremendous. Yeah. My hometown originally. So, a great, venue called the Pipe Yard or the Pipe Shop. It's a 7,500 square foot former shipbuilding factory that's been renovated into a big event space in a beautiful area right on the waterfront. Come out if you want a little vacation and go and attend a great watch show. A lot of the brands that are here have already committed to Vancouver. I'm sure we'll fill it up. It's going to be a tremendous venue. And we've actually already booked another venue, even larger venue for next year with the Toronto show. So September 19th to 21st, 2025. So my horizon is like a year and a few months ahead for the various shows. So yes, I'm crazy, but this is what you need to do to plan it properly. So yeah.
And Jason, thank you so much for coming up here. Thank you so much for putting on this show and for chatting with us for a few minutes. This is great.
Thank you so much. Appreciate
your
time.
You. Appreciate
thank you, everyone. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So good. All right, we've got a lot of other buddies in the crowd. So next up, we've got a very longtime supporter of the show, a really good friend, somebody who I respect immensely, and I know Jason does as well, VJ Geronimo, North American president for Oris. Come on up here.
How are you?
VJ, you were on the show, we'll call it 2 years ago.
You're a veteran.
Yeah.
Yes.
We did this in Chicago. I didn't want to miss an opportunity. Thank you very much for finding a few minutes, because the Oris booth has been slammed all day. So I know Mark and the team and Josh are having to, you know, fight people back. But thanks for coming up here. Thanks for chatting with us. Oris has had an incredible run in the last couple of years, and I definitely want to touch on Oris, but I'd love from your perspective, someone who's been in the industry for a very long time and operated at a very high level, and Oris really touches multiple stratas of watch enthusiasm, really big shows, Airstream, tours, Red Bar involvement. What do you think of a show like this for a city like Toronto?
Yeah, I think it's very much long overdue. I think it's great that we've put it together, that you've been able to put it together here. There's always been a big community of watch enthusiasts in Canada, especially Toronto as well. Obviously, we've done a lot of things for a long time with the Red Bar groups locally throughout the different cities, Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver, over time, certainly. So it's great to be here. And when I first heard about it, I was interested in coming aboard and definitely, then to be honest about it, I heard about it relatively late. So, and then when I heard about it, I'm like, we definitely need to do that, because it was definitely something that we wanted to do and be part of. And certainly as a brand that's really tries to be very close to the watch community, certainly wanted to be part of an inaugural event and be part of doing something like that. So.
I think it is a good fit for Auris, and you probably agree. What is it about Auris that sort of cuts through that those multiple levels that, that seems to appeal to folks that come to a show like this, which is more casual and down to earth?
I mean, I think we try to be approachable as a brand and just be people. You know, there's a lot of, for lack of a better word, pretension that goes on in our industry, I think. And
that's the right word.
I think, I think to be able to operate, we try to operate, you know, obviously we're a luxury brand, independent, been around for 120 years. So we certainly have the pedigree to exist, you know, in the Watches and Wonders world and be part of that, but also really be close to the watch enthusiast community and try to do things that are approachable, right? Some shows people come to and things are behind glass and it's like, I can't touch them and do that. And in an environment like this is certainly welcoming and people are really happy to do it. And it's really nice to be again in Toronto in Canada doing this because, you know, a lot of people think about Canada. Canada is not the United States. Like we all know that, right? So it's hard to, and some people don't think about it that way. And I think if you understand that, then you know that it's a different place and you have to also be involved in a different way or try to be, you know, involved in the local side of it.
Also, I like the way that it plays out in the way that Auris actually operates, not just the product that you make or the people that work with you, but for those of you who haven't had the pleasure of Watches and Wonders, Auris is probably one of the more down-to-earth brands that exists at this giant show. You know, they're next to some very high-profile, very fancy, very cool brands. Nothing wrong with being doing one thing one way or something another way. But even the way that you guys went ahead and made the booth speaks to the fact that you wanted it to be as open as possible. There's no roof. It's probably the only one that has any airspace in that entire place. And you can go in there and get an incredible coffee and you can see a bunch of watches. And I've always thought that while you make a product that fits in with the rest of the industry, of course, dive watches, pilot watches, the rest of it, that the sort of ethos of how you guys choose what you focus on kind of speaks a lot to your ability to connect to actual people who buy watches.
Yeah. And I think that's just something that's part of the culture of what we do. I mean, obviously you guys know Rolf, you know, Ulrich, our executive chairman. So like that attitude just pervades all the way down and we're able to be ourselves. We're able to do things, be approachable, try to do things that make sense. And yeah, in Geneva, we have a big booth that's more like a cafe than it is a trade show booth where many of them are just like closed rooms of people. And we try to have a very open and inviting area. And that's, you know, what we like to, how we like to be. So
as you're talking, I have this idea in my mind that Auris is like the Canada of watch brands. Very friendly and approachable, you know. Yes.
Well, I know you were much like I mentioned it when you came up to the stage. I know you're quite busy and we said we'd lock you in for 5 or 6 minutes. And I know I'm running the clock on that. Give us a minute on what you're excited about for Auris in the future.
Yeah,
I know you probably can't be super specific. I mean, there's something really great coming up. I saw that
product coming. You know, obviously we're on a planning horizon, much like you are planning horizon 2 years out beyond product wise. So there's a lot of good, I think, things coming in the next few months, coming out in Geneva, a bunch of different things as a brand, just trying to continue the product focus that we have. Obviously, you know, we've launched our own movement, Caliber 400, a few years ago, and that's been something that we've been kind of focusing on and doing a bit, really trying to make watches that people want and make people watches that people, you know, listening to consumer feedback. That's certainly something we always try to do and work into those things. So I think you know that more than anybody.
Absolutely.
We make watches based on feedback from people.
Always, of course. Yeah. I'm really excited about what you guys have, like even just in the next little while. It's really good. I'm sorry I can't say anything more, but you'll like it. And thank you so much for coming up and chatting for a few minutes.
Thank you for
Absolute
having me.
It's great to have you on the stage again.
Right. Thank you.
All right, let's see. Who do we want next? One of the other Jasons in my life. I have many Jasons. Mr. Gallup, come on up. This is Jason Gallup, owner, proprietor of Roldorf & Co. in Vancouver, an extremely dear friend, the man who rebuilt my family's heirloom watch. I could go on for a long time. He's also been on the show like 2 or 3 times. This might be 3 for you. It's you and Cole Pennington and Lauren Ballesta.
It's like greatest hits for TGN here. We've got all these old guests coming
Absolutely.
Up.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much. You know, when you said that this might actually happen, I didn't believe you. And now it's even scarier than I ever thought. All these guys. At least when you're doing a podcast, we're just
Yeah, okay. Just hanging out.
But now there's them.
Just pretend they're not there.
Pretend they're not there for 5 minutes.
Imagine them all in their underwear. Is that anyone think what they say to do? You know?
So it's a similar question because we're following a theme here. You are a WoStep trained watchmaker, yeah. Second generation. You know, your father started a store in Vancouver. You essentially exist on all corners of the fascination. You know the technical side. You operate a retail space. You also do as much as you can to train people about watchmaking. Anytime I have a question, especially one where I get an answer that I don't believe, he's my fact checker. He's always a text message away. You've been nothing but helpful. You're an avid diver, Land Rover owner, and a Wrangler owner. Yeah. Everything fits. It's a surprising that I didn't end up with two Jasons on this show.
Oh, that's a lot of boxes.
So what do you think? We've got a watch show in Toronto, and you've got one coming to Vancouver.
Yeah, I think seeing this happen here is absolutely
heartwarming.
It really is. It reminded me how far Vancouver is away from Toronto. That's another thing. But now there's one coming to Vancouver, which is brilliant. This is really strong. This is really, really strong. And having the brand, seeing all the brands that are out there, that is absolutely incredible. I know I'm reiterating what other people have already just said, but this is great. We can't just let the Americans have all of this, right? Because
we can do it too.
Yeah, but they've got their thing, you know. So we got to have ours, and we're gonna do it with Swiss chalet, you know.
Oh, we did. Yeah, we had some Swiss chalet for lunch. We're going to get to that with our another future guest in a moment. But I had to. We had to. Come on.
I'm curious, like, from your perspective, living way out west, what do you see as a big difference between the markets or the kind of the watch culture, if any, between Vancouver and Toronto?
I think it's just the culture in general. There certainly is a big difference between east and west, or more central and west. It's hard to quantify and to describe. You kind of have to be there because it's part of a feeling more than anything else. I don't think there's anything less with regard to the need for information and the love of watches and how people, just swarm around those things. We have smaller clubs or groups in Vancouver as well. It's not just Red Bar. There's some other emerging ones that are absolutely fantastic. But Vancouver is just Vancouver. It does it. It's in its own way. It might be the sea air, the mountain air, you know, all of that mm-hmm. comes into it. But different.
And the accent is quite strong in Vancouver, it sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah, it comes out when I'm around my wife, yeah.
So are we going to do some diving out in Vancouver
We certainly in April? Have to. Yeah, I think we were talking about a couple of sunken Canadian frigates that we could visit. Yeah. So there's some treasure down there.
Great.
But that's the thing. I have to say, with all of this, you ticked off those boxes, but there's particular things like diving that sit so well with watches, and we're really into that. And when you actually get to use a watch for its intended purpose, it's amazing. You actually see it underwater as opposed to just up in air, and I love that. And then the photography side of it too.
Oh yeah, for sure.
It's just brilliant. And I must be mad for having, you know, a retail store and a workshop and everything else.
Speaking of the workshop, I'm curious, for the Vancouver show, in your mind, and I know I'm putting you right on the spot here, but in your mind, if you're imagining some sort of education into watchmaking or a solution or you know, a way of kind of exalting the watchmaking training side of it, is that something you think has a home at a show like this?
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't think there can be, you can't go wrong with something like that, because we've tried and tested it in the store, right? So when people come in, the first thing they see are benches and people working on watches. So you've got watches in all kinds of state of disassembly or reassembly, and it wows people. And even for young kids that come in with their parents or whatever, to actually see that, the kids love it. Mm-hmm. Bring them right up to the bench and they're right up on top. kids do not have any fear when it comes down to small things. It truly is amazing. You can give them tweezers and there may be some small screwdrivers that'll just go, great, like this. Adults tend to have a lot of fear with regard to that stuff. Like, what if I lose it or whatever? Oh, well, whatever. It doesn't matter. But seeing kids do that, it's brilliant. Yeah.
Well, that's great, man. And I really appreciate the one that you came all the way out here essentially to hang out, have some Swiss Chalet.
Yeah.
And I was thrilled that you said you'd come on the show for a few minutes. So thank you so much for coming on and saying hi. Well, it's a treat to see you, man. Yeah, always will be.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks.
Thanks so much.
Go ahead. All right. Well, we have another chap here with a funny accent who's visiting, happens to be sitting next to Jason there, our good friend Kenneth Lamb, owner and founder of Arkin Watch Company out of the UK, who made the long journey over and surprised us yesterday when he showed up. So Ken, come on up.
Let's put this on real quick.
Oh yeah, there it is.
I feel like it's uniform.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah. Ken, thank you so much. A truly delightful surprise. I'm seldom like jaw dropped, and when I went to say hi to Rico, and you were sitting next to him, I was just like, what? He came all the way. It's great. It's so nice
Thanks
to see you,
man.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, Arkin is an incredibly awesome design forward producer of sport watches. I have an Alterum, which I really like. The company's only been around and running for a couple of years at this point, but you've made a real connection in our Slack and with the sort of TGN crew world. And, I'm curious to get your perspective. You're not showing at this show, but I think you're starting to feel out the world of the watch community beyond what's available on the internet. And how does this sit for you? How do you think this feels for a young brand?
First, I just want to say, thanks. Obviously, that's really kind words. It means a lot. And I love spending time on the TGN Slack. It's just...
best corner of the internet.
It's just it's a party, man. You can just type anything in and there's a million answers for everything. It's wicked. The thing with this show is, I want to be here as a consumer, right? That's the difficult part, right? I want to be here. I want to walk up to the other brand stands and see what's going on. And I want to be able to kind of walk around and chat to people and all that sort of stuff. But being here and seeing obviously the scale, the infrastructure, everything's been set up and is so organized. That's, a testament to Jason and people like Rico and other people that have played a big part in, yourself setting things up and figuring things out. It's no small feat, right? We did our first ever show in the UK at the start of the year, and it was daunting, right? And nobody really knew how it was going to go, right? You've got all these people that are going to turn up, and one thing could just tank it, right? Mm-hmm. But seeing obviously all come together and everyone's really enthusiastic and they want to try on all the watches, and there's nothing that really beats just a complete stranger coming up to you and being like, can I try on your watch?
Hey, what is that?
What's that? Can I try on your watch? And outside of the room, you're like, no, get away from me, right? But in the room, you're like, yeah. And you take it off and you go, yeah, have it. Take it, right?
Hand it to him before you know it. You've got your back turned.
Yeah, exactly.
To the
line, and sometimes you just hand it and then you're still in the middle of a conversation with somebody else.
Yeah, it's my watch.
Yeah. So that environment kind of just says how unique it is. And there's nothing that beats that. And I think that's the driving forces to why I like being in this mm-hmm. space and why I like kind of engaging with the community. And that's why it's going to be hard to be stuck behind a table at some point. Cause the fun is out here. Right. So
I think, when we were talking to Jason and when we've talked privately before the show, we thought why would anyone take on organizing a show like this? And I think the same about starting a small watch brand. When I look at all the brands out here, small, big, medium sized, I think what a huge lift that is to start a brand from scratch. And you've done that. And that thrill of that you just talked about with somebody coming up to you and admiring your watch or wanting to, try it on or whatever. I mean, we get a little bit of that with the folks we've met in the past, day here about people coming up and saying, we love your podcast. It's very humbling. It's very, it's quite an experience. But talk a little bit about what it was like to start a brand. I mean, it must just be so daunting. What was it like at the beginning?
Honestly, I think I had the blinkers on, right? I wasn't really thinking about everything that could go wrong. I was just kind of the next thing. Ooh, let's do that. And I was just chasing a rabbit down a hole, right? But then when you kind of step back, you kind of look back at where you've come from and you're like, there's quite a lot of things that just happened there. If I was looking, it's like climbing up a mountain and then you look back at the drop. As long as I'm not looking back, it's fine, right?
Yeah.
Because if you're looking back, you're like, oh God.
Nowhere
like,
to go but up.
This could go horribly wrong, right? Mm-hmm. Like the risk is so bad. But it's the fun and it's the excitement and kind of always making new things that's like driving me to just keep climbing up the mountain. But again, like it's the support of people that are, you know, in this room and out there that are also cheering you on. They're the ones at the top, like
for sure,
telling you to keep your eyes on them. And that kind of helps you kind of move forward. And yeah, so it's that's great.
Yeah. Also, you know, the other thing that stands out as I've been obsessed with micro brand watches essentially roughly as long as micro brand watches have been a thing. I came into the hobby with not a big wallet and very big eyes, and you can experience a lot of varied watchmaking in the micro brand space. You can, and you still can, whether we want to call it micro brand or boutique, it's up to you. But what I like about as you meet people in the micro brand space, you meet guys who run a company, and I think of you, I think of Jason Lim at Halios, I think of Steve at previously Benares and now Raven. These are guys who like obviously like their watch, and if you found them on the street, you'd have an Altera on, but can appreciate anything else. It doesn't have to be your brand. And I'm curious, with your eye for detail, which is incredible, and your sense of style and design, and now the knowledge that you have after making two watches, neither a really simple process. When you do a lap out there, anything stand out in your mind as like, oh, that's quite impressive.
There's a lot in that room, to be fair. Yeah, there's a lot. I save weekends for like watches that aren't mine. Right? Like it's like you have a nice car to drive on the weekends, right? So on the weekends I'll put something on that's not an Arkin, and then just, you know, that's the thing. But the thing that really connects me to the brands oftentimes is like the ideology of the person who's behind them, right?
The
like,
why?
Yeah, yeah. Cause like that's really, you can kind of see that coming through in the design. And that's what really gets me. And like seeing like I was in here with the chat earlier with Aries, and he's obviously got a very unique background and he's got a very unique perspective and approach to like making watches that's so far from the traditional like artisanal approach of watchmaking. And that in itself is quite appealing. And I like that side of things, because it's just one guy who like wants to make the thing he wants to make. And whether it's him or it's Jonathan Ferrer at Brew, which is the first time I've met him, and he's like the nicest dude. Everyone before I even met him, everyone's like, yeah, Jonathan Ferrer is the nicest guy in watches. And in my head I was like, okay, and then I met him, he is the nicest guy in the fight. Yeah, like I was talking to him asking him about his watches, and like within 5 seconds he'd already switched it to me and made me feel special. So like it was and it's those guys that kind of stand out for me, and why I like wearing other brands other than my own. So
well, I think to piggyback on your point, I think that the difference between a show like this and something like Watches and Wonders as well is the community spirit and kind of collaboration that you see. Like you can go chat with or even get feedback or tips from Aries or the folks at Elliott Brown or whoever, and or you know, trade stories with Jonathan or whoever. And there's just this community spirit here where everybody's sort of the rising tide lifts all boats. And I really get that sense out here. And I think whether it's a Christopher Ward or an Oris, that is very prevalent among the smaller brands, certainly.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And even the ones that are, you know, kind of like growing at faster rates, for example, like say Christopher Ward, for example, right? The guys at Christopher Ward, they're cut from the same cloth. Do you know what I mean? Like whether you're talking to Mike Pearson, who's played in the, you know, he's played in the big leagues with some of the big brands, and then he comes back and he's like, he's still the same guy, and he's still communicating watches to you in a way that like you can relate to and you can digest, and then that makes you want to connect with the brand then. And they've always got the advice. He's always like, you know, come down to the showroom or come down to the workshop. And that's like, that's where, you know, that's where the fun happens. So yeah.
So the most important question of our chat today,
I know where this is going.
What did you think of a quarter chicken white with fries?
Okay, so just to be clear, right? I had quarter chicken.
That's a gentleman's move. To be fair.
I was very glad that they didn't just give me drumsticks; they gave me the thigh.
Yep,
quality move. right out the gate, that was a quality move.
Yep.
Chicken and chips, back home, I was talking to Jason Gallup. Yeah, chicken and chips, a staple. Loved it. Oh, yeah. Great. The sauce.
you're going to love it, not, or you hate it.
It's not bad, right? Like, let me just throw that out. It's not bad.
It is weird, though.
But it's so unique. It's
it
not
has
like
no definition.
It leaves me speechless, right?
You called it a dipping soup.
Yeah, so it's not a sauce. It's not a gravy. It's like a thick dipping soup. and it works
for me.
Like, yeah, because like, especially if you've got, I think, do you know where I think I might have made the mistake? Is that I think if I'd have went white, it would have worked better with the dipping soup. Because
I'm a white guy in that case. I love a chicken thigh.
Yeah, there's more seasoning in the thigh, which I think was clashing with the dipping soup. Whereas the white meat would have complemented it better. And then that's my final take on
Swiss Chalet. Well, it was a deep pleasure of mine to be able to take you to Swiss Chalet. Yeah,
I enjoyed it. Yeah. I enjoyed the journey for it. It was like an adventure, like going to, you know, like Harold and Kumar going to White
Castle. Yeah,
right?
For sure.
It was like we went on this adventure to Swiss Chalet, and it was like, I'm gonna get there. Yeah, it was good fun.
All right, Kenneth, thank you so much for coming up and chit-chatting with us, and for coming all this
way. Thank you for having me.
Check out his watches.
Thank you, sir.
All right, so we've got one or two left, but we're going to jump over to another voice from the Canadian side of the watch media, our buddy Rico of previously Rico's Watches podcast. Welcome. How you doing, man? How are you, man? How you doing?
Good, man. This is fun. This is like the best crossover since Deadpool and Wolverine.
We're having a good time. I think we're going to gross at least that in the box office.
I think you got like
the
Hugh Jackman thing going on. You can pull it off. Sure. Yeah,
It'll be good. Man, it's an absolute treat to have you here. You know, we obviously have been on each other's radars for quite some time. And you did Rico's Watches podcast was like 3 years it went for?
Yeah, I did it for about 3 years. I wrapped it up last September and had a kid.
Do you miss it some days?
Not as much as I love my kids.
That's fair. I mean, yeah, of course.
Yeah, no, it was a lot of fun. It was a great experience. You know, it is doing it by yourself, like a full-time job on top of a full-time job, right? So, I mean, you guys are doing a ton of work as well. You guys know exactly what it's like with the podcasting thing, and I'm okay to not be doing it anymore. So,
you had some involvement with the show. We attended your chat with Aries, and you know, I think as a kind of a voice of Canadian watch enthusiasm, as you are, you know, what's your take on the show? I mean, just kind of first impressions of the first day and what you've seen.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think this was very necessary. I think it needed to happen. I think Jason did a fantastic job. I think that it was sort of already touched on as well too, that we can't just let the Americans have all the fun. And I think we're seeing the value in something like this happening on the Canadian side of the border now, because there's so many opportunities that come from these trade shows and connections that are made, and kind of regardless of what your brand is, what your niche is, kind of, you know, if you're the Grey NATO, or if you're just a smaller group like myself, or like the Sketchy Boys Watch Club or something like that, there's such varied content here, and you're able to just grow the business and grow the connections that you have, and build out kind of what the Canadian watch market is, right? I mean, it's sort of one of these more mysterious things. It's a much smaller population here than it is on the American side or even on the European side, right?
Sure, yeah.
But being able to kind of build it out and give it an identity, I think that's incredibly important. And, you know, I mean, I'm from Edmonton. It's like, might as well just be like the Walking Dead of watches out there. It's a horological, like, let's be honest, right? It's Calgary is going to be where you're going to have like actual watches, and then Vancouver and Toronto or where it's at, right? So I think being able to come out here and see like a much more interesting, engaged, open audience, all the companies that came out, I mean, the European guys that came out here, I was talking to one guy, he flew 23 hours to be here, right? Like, that's insane. Yeah. I came from Edmonton, it was 4, right? And I was like, oh,
it was like 40 minutes for me to get here.
Wow, yeah, okay, well, yeah. By car, yeah, probably.
Subway.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's really cool. I mean, it means a lot that this is a thing.
Absolutely.
And I am very happy to hear that we're already having Vancouver. We're going to have Toronto again next year. Like, this is going to continue to develop, and I couldn't ask for a better thing for the community.
Yeah, I couldn't say it any better than that. I, you know, much like I asked Ken, you're an absolute watch nerd. Mm. You know a ton of brands, both small all the way up to the big ones. When you were doing a lap, was there anything you were really excited to see or anything that kind of surprised you?
when I was going through there, especially on like the industry night on Friday, right? Like it was kind of like, it was, I was joking around. It's like the old Rogues Gallery from the podcast, right? It was super cool to kind of bump in everybody and like see everyone in person. And everyone's so much taller than I remember them sitting at my desk, watching, talking to them on Zoom. Right. So it's like, that's pretty cool. I mean, being able to handle like brands from like the more obscure markets as well, to like Micro Mill Spec, for example, from Norway, right? Like being able to actually see that in person, handle that
chronograph is very impressive. In
super
person.
Cool watch. Yeah. Right. And again, like small company, a lot of people didn't know about them, but to see what they're doing. And from that part of the world, right. It's just something that you just don't get to see a lot. Being able to help out Matt and help him with the Aries booth and Marathon. Like, you know, despite them being a Canadian company, I've never held one until this, right?
Yeah, I mean, they had mentioned that, and you know, we had them on, we had Mitchell on the show a couple weeks ago, and in one of the times that we were chatting, he was saying that it's one of the biggest things, the value for them. It's weird because they are like a very early online brand. They went to online sales very quickly, and also it well not quickly, but just at a time when online sales were still kind of early, and that's because the brand didn't have like public facing side of it. And it's kind of a fascinating thing to see them here, three deep with, you know, cool t-shirts, and man, that the new diver.
Oh, right.
That's real cool.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And kind of going back to your first question a little bit as well too, I think what's so special about this as well is obviously Canada is a huge country. It's super spread out. We have the most square kilometers per person in the world, right? For our population, right? So like if you're coming from a place like Edmonton, where maybe there's only a million people, but there's not a big watch culture there, or you're coming from like a small town in like PEI or something like that, you don't get the opportunity to see a lot of these watches, right? You know, if you're from Toronto, if you're from Vancouver, yeah, there's probably an AD somewhere you can go visit and you can handle things, but you don't get to do that in a lot of parts of this country. So I think it just, again, speaks to the value of doing that here, because you're giving people an opportunity to travel somewhere that, yeah, maybe you got to hop on a plane or something like that, but you're not going to New York. You're not going to Chicago or San Francisco. You're still staying within your country, and you're going to go visit and get a new experience you wouldn't necessarily be able to have if you're, you know, living in some other part of the country that's very, very sparsely populated.
Yeah. Right? And then with Vancouver on the horizon, you've been to this the first Toronto one. What's one, will we see you in Vancouver?
Hope so.
Yeah, me too. I'm pumped. And two, what brand would you love to see in Vancouver that's not here? Let's push them a little closer to the edge.
Well,
besides Arkham.
Well, yeah, right. I mean, that was kind of like my default answer. She already took that away from me.
I think Ken doesn't want to do a booth. You might have to do the jacket.
That's fair enough. You know, I think it'd be cool to see more of the UK tactical brands come out. Like I think like getting like even like some of the more heritage ones, like CWC, something like that. Like
Elliot Brown's so cool.
Yeah, Elliot Brown's awesome. Like, you know, it's really cool to kind of put a name to the faces or a face to the name of the people I've been talking to and working with on things and stuff like that.
I was thinking Vertex should definitely be.
Vertex would be cool. Yeah, get Don out here. That'd be super fun, right? So getting some people like that out here would be really cool.
The UK especially, because it's going to be rainy.
Right? Well, absolutely. They're used to it, right? So it's just, yeah, it's just a really long trip to have the exact same weather. When it comes to maybe some of the more mainstream brands as well too, would be really cool. Like the like the bigger, you know, get the Tudors and, you know, the Omegas and things like that. And especially because there's such a large AD presence in Vancouver, it'd be cool to kind of get like some of the ADs to come out and maybe set those up and do that on those companies' behalf. And then you can get a chance to experience some of those brands as well too. And I think, like, again, this is the first year. And like, I have a thing where when I'm training people or I'm doing training on the street for my job, you know, I say like, you'll never be as bad as the first time you do something, right? This was awesome. So it can only get more better from here, right? And the recognition, the presence, people are going to see everything that happened in the last 2 days with the amount of people that have come here and the crowd and the engagement that's been had. And like, who doesn't want to be a part of this next year, right?
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. Well, before we let you go, I just wanted to ask, you know, for those that maybe miss the Rico's Watches podcast and don't know where to find you these days, what are you up to in terms of the watch space?
Yeah, no, thanks for asking. So after I wrapped up the podcast, I kind of continued on with the direction the podcast went. For the last like 18 months of the podcast, I was doing focusing very heavily on like military, law enforcement, intelligence, that community. Got to talk to some really cool people like Rick Prado, people like that. And some of those really, really awesome interviews that I got to engage in, which were just priceless experiences to be able to talk to people like that. So I wanted to continue on with that. I ended up starting a group called the Sketchy Boys Watch Club. It's our logo. You can find us online on Instagram. We got a website, we've got all that stuff. And basically it's a watch enthusiast club that focuses on the law enforcement, military, paramilitary kind of side of things, tactical watches, tool watches, that sort of stuff. It's welcome to everybody, obviously, but that's kind of the oriented way of the content that we procure. And it's been going really well. Like it's already outgrown, at least through all the socials and things like that. It's already like pretty much bigger than Rico's was in less than a year or just over a year. So
it's amazing, yeah. Man. Congrats.
Yeah, thanks, man.
It's a great follow. I highly recommend it. And thank you so much for coming up and chatting with us.
Thanks, fellas. It was awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was awesome. See you.
All right, as we continue the tour of buddies, friends, moms on the show, we're going to bring up the guy that introduced Jason and I a long, long time ago and has been, there's no word other than cheerleader.
No, I mean,
he's the man, I would say, you can fight me if you think I'm wrong. He's the reason Braymont's known on this side of the world to begin with. He's now with Christopher Ward and he's doing exactly the same thing for a brand that's doing really great watches with really transparent pricing. I highly recommend you check them out. Let's bring them up. Mike Pearson, come on up, buddy.
How are you doing? You're right. Thank you. Very emotional. Hey, everybody.
This is great.
Can I say, while I'm back there, this is the longest I've sat down in about 7 weeks. So
man, come on.
Thank you for letting
you deserve
me do this.
Yeah.
kick back, pull up another chair, get your feet up. Come on.
Tony, horizontal is not good for me right now.
I also, if I lay down, that's where that's calling it. We're going to get to a Q&A in just a couple of minutes. We'll keep Mike up here for the Q&A because he's got an incredible wealth of information about this industry. And it comes from an entirely different side of the world than what Jason and I could answer as far as questions. But I also encourage you, if said previous 5-minute guest is still in the room, ask a question for them and we'll get the mic to them. Mike.
Yes.
Thank you for helping us make TGN, you know, almost a decade ago.
It was nothing, literally. I met you both individually and just was having one of those moments of, you know, who you should really meet? You should meet Jason, you should meet James. And it was no other intention of that good people should know good people. And I think we've all benefited from that one moment, but you deserve to know each other. And I think we all gain a lot of knowledge by you being in the industry and you cut through a lot of the bad stuff that's there. It's just true when money's involved, sometimes it can take away some of the softness or the niceties of this industry. And I say this again, I was at the back. I was like, every time I listen to you, I'm walking my dogs and I relax at the end. I don't know what you guys all do. You're at the gym, or you're driving in your car, you're all nodding away there. I walk my dogs. I don't think about watches, but I listen to my friends talking about watches. But it's not about the watches. It's the things around it that matter. So always. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Of course, my man. Oh, please.
I think it's so fitting that you're the one that introduced us, because I think it is such a testament to you and kind of your skill. I think that is your primary skill, isn't it? I mean, you're very knowledgeable about watches, but I think you're all about bringing people together.
Always, yeah.
And we've seen that with what you've done with even at the very grassroots level with the local community get-togethers, the red bars, the small enthusiast groups. And what's your take on Toronto? I mean, you've been all over. I mean, you've been here before. Hey, probably
the first time we met was a watch show, watch hangout in Toronto.
Was that the first one?
Liberty Village.
Oh, that was that. That's a long, that's Liberty, many, many
Liberty,
years
Liberty
ago.
Village Pub, was that what it was called?
Yeah, it was.
Something like that. I don't know if it's still named that, but.
No idea.
It was like a Braymont open house night, 2010.
I met some guys yesterday who did that, and he brought me a lot of Kit Kats. He brought me a coffee crisp as well as you did, Rhonda. So I've had some Canadian stuff, but he brought me everything British, and he loves shouting spotted dick around. Sorry.
Hey, this is a family show.
Sorry, mum. But it's a dessert. Bleep it out. But more than anything, he remembered that first night as well. And there's some really great characters here. My personal journey in Canada has always been quite cool, actually, but it's always been, as we've said, kind of left alone by some of the brands. But it's really important. There's not a ton of people here, but you could have one person or 1,000 people. It's going to make a difference to any brand, no matter the size. So for Jason and anybody to come along and do this show, put it together, have you guys here, all the brands, it's what needs to happen. And I'm so, so glad that we are. And actually, this show was signed up before I even joined Christopher Ward, but it was a thing I would have done for sure.
And do you think that a show like this aligns nicely with Christopher Ward? Or is there a higher profile that suits?
No, I mean, two days ago, I was in Montreal. We were in an Irish pub at the top, and it was a great pub, right? It wasn't clean, but...
Yeah, you already clean, said it was a pub.
But when you throw down a tablecloth and you've got some cool lights, the watches are the star. We had 70 people there. We had some okay food, but it didn't matter. It's okay. But it was about the beer, and we had some great chats. And I've found that, especially this year with Christopher Ward, when I joined, I said to Mike France, says, do not worry about my energy levels. They're disgusting and you will be thinking I need a break and I'm going to be burnt out. It's not what I do. I just feel like when I've got a project, whichever it is, whichever brand I've been with, which has been a couple now, but over a long time, this brand needs to be seen and felt. It's really big. It's bigger than what I thought it was in terms of a brand, but the potential is untapped and we fly under the tree line and it can't just be about Chicago, New York and San Francisco. You need to go to Raleigh, North Carolina. You have to go to Minnesota, Detroit, and you have to come to Toronto. I mean, half the population of this country is in this part of the world. So go to Toronto and we got ran at today and you know, there was 300 people outside the door as I was walking past. Oh God, I wasn't ready for it, but it's perfect. Yeah,
added another cup of coffee.
Oh, yeah, big time.
I got to know. I mean, people must see you on Instagram like you're like all over the world. Like every day you're in a different place. And I'm curious, like, what is your secret for maintaining your level of energy and just staying healthy? I mean, I'm serious. I mean, I think it's a serious question because you never seem to fade.
Health-wise, I'm very cognizant of when to stop. I like a beer. We all like a gin and tonic. And I live in Texas, so there's bourbon there. But nothing good happens after 9:30 ever in this industry. And I mean that. You can have some great chats, but the next morning you are awful.
That's a sentence that says he's been to a couple Basel World.
Couple, yeah. That's different level. That's also the stodgy pretzels and really bad sausages. But if you can go and have that first drink with everybody, that's all you need. And the next morning, I mean, we start here at 10. You've got a few hours to have a walk, go and see the city. I joined something a year ago called F45, which is 45 minutes, which is, I'm a sweaty mess, but I get everything out. And my wife's a big believer in slowing me down because I've got all this energy. So she's brilliant. But I also know that I'm a person that needs to be walked, fed, and have my tummy rub every now and then. So I am the dog of the family. But just know your moments. I really do believe, you know, yes, days off and weeks off are massively important, but the hours I take are probably more important than anything. And that's my time. I had a drive from Montreal down here, and if I didn't have anybody in the car, it would have been perfect for recharge. But I had Adam Craniotis, and he didn't stop talking for 6 hours. So if you're watching, I hate you, I love you, I hate you. But
sometimes if you're on a drive and the other person just wants to ramble and you can just kind of fade out,
no.
Just pay attention to, you know, keeping it on the road.
Well, I tried to put some music on, but he's also got awful tasty music, which I found as well. So love him, not his music.
Yeah, I wish he was able to stay a little bit longer. As soon as I saw that they were doing a Red Bar thing, I texted him, but he said he was doing some family stuff this weekend, which is obviously the best excuse.
Family first. And that's probably a big thing as well. My two young girls, I've got to be a dad. I've got to be a husband. And I will say, social media, as much as I post, I'm not there all the time. You've got to be safe. So you post the stories 3 days later. Mm-hmm. So the more people see, yes, but I'm also hiding a lot of the time as well. So
what are people liking today at the booth? I mean, you've got the new diver.
A little everything. The massive amount of appreciation that we came and we're like, no, thank you for coming. but it's been 20 years in the making for Christopher Ward. I've been here a lot, but Christopher Ward have never done anything in Canada, but that's just because it was a small brand. Belcanto happened and life changed. The house was on fire, so they had to, you know, add rocket boosters and know how to deal with it. And Christopher Ward have done brilliantly with that. But what Mike France and Peter Ellis have done is then go to the next step, great on supply chain, and then it's teamwork. Get the right team in place, and very thankful that they wanted me to do that too. But yeah, every watch has been good because they've never seen them. So. Yeah.
Well, that's great. Look, I want to keep you up here for some Q&A.
Okay.
I'm sure we've got some questions. If anybody has a question, please raise your hand and a microphone will be brought over to you. So just so that makes it on the recording, because this is the episode for Thursday. So I appreciate you.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
Hot mic. I'm Mark. I write for Watermound. I just want to say thank you for coming to Toronto. And I've got a personal story about TGN. years ago, my mother was ill, and every night I used to have to go to the hospital to go visit her. And it was a long drive. And I used to listen to the TGN on the podcast. Now, I don't wear Blundstone boots. I don't wear Nano Puffs. I don't care about any of that. But I cared about the relationship that you guys have online on the podcast. And that kept me sane, kept me entertained. And I still listen to you guys all the time. And I was listening to you guys on the way in here by train, coming from Montreal. And at one point, I was talking to Brent, and Jason passed by. And I heard my podcast walk right by me. And I turned around and said, whoa. So I just wanted to say thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Oh, here's a few hands. All right, here we go.
I like your shirt.
Up a bit.
Thanks, James. I'm Ken from Melbourne, Australia, long-time listener. First, I want to say thank you for the community you've created with the TGN Slack. It's incredible how wide it spans and how many cities it covers. Like, it feels like everywhere I go in the world now, I've got a community and friends to meet up with. And all these meetups have been springing up in all these places around the world. I've been to one in Philly, one in New York. We have a regular catch up in Melbourne. Shout out to the Melbourne crew, and now one in Toronto. So I want to ask you, we've talked about the TGN Summit for a long time now. Any plans in the works?
I would love to do something. I think at this point it probably should be Minneapolis. People can get in there, and it's in the Midwest, which has always worked for us. The attendance for the stuff that we do for Wind Up Chicago is always really high, and some people listening travel halfway across the world to come hang out for a nice, very hot weekend in Chicago. I would love to do something that kind of mixed what we're doing now, but with a few experiences. And I think that's also with some local knowledge, something we could put together. I think it's possible. I think, we're pretty open on the show about what we're good at and what we're not good at. And we might need a logistics partner. I would lean extensively on my wife if we had to start, putting together a whole event, but I would absolutely love to. And now that I think we're well and clear of the, sort of pandemic concerns, I think it's probably time to start readdressing that for sure.
So that sounds awesome. And yeah.
Stay tuned, I suppose, like we say for most things.
Did you say you're from Melbourne, Australia?
Yes.
I hope you're here for other reasons. Did you come just for this? You can lie. You can say yes.
Yes, I absolutely came to Toronto just for this.
Oh, that's wow. What a man. What a gentleman.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
One more?
Hi. First, thanks for being a hub for creating this awesome community.
Of course, yeah.
Tangential question to this gentleman. TGN Tobermory Dive. When is that happening?
Oh, that is... let's call it next summer. I think it's a little late. I want Sarah to be able to come along. She's in a wetsuit.
I don't know. 7 mil in December in Georgian Bay is pretty exhilarating.
The first dive's okay. It's the second one that you're never warm again.
No.
Yeah. I would absolutely love that. I mean, that part of the world is just so special.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah.
TGN Summit. Can you help us organize that? No, don't answer now. You can
talk. No, you can talk later.
It's not a no.
Yeah. Great question though. Yeah.
Thank you.
Anyone else have a question? We've got probably five more minutes, so please. We can run the clock a bit. There's nobody after us.
Charles, I came in from Michigan. We've seen a lot of changes in the watch industry over the last 5 or 10 years. It kind of went up and went crazy, and it's gone back to maybe where it was before the pandemic. How has that affected brands like Christopher Ward, and where do you see it going from here? Is it plateaued, or what is your vision for the future?
Well, the pandemic did a ton of things. Number one, obviously, but more than anything, we knew that we could trust buying apples on Amazon. So everything after that was free range, right? So the digital world is very different. The digital market and how we speak, how we listen, how we promote, how we write, everything's different. How the retailers who are brick and mortar, which I still believe, even though I work for a very much only online brand, are important because they are the trainers, they are the people, the heart, the soul of every brand story. Because if they take it on and tell you, it goes. But it's evolved and it's grown. So I think we're still a bit too close to what was to know what we're going to be. But I do know that we're in a mix of digital, analog, as we all are, in, especially in a TGN world. But how we sell is varied. And if we can be understanding that we're not there at the end yet and we can always be quite malleable and changing, then we're going to be all right. But brand-wise, like Christopher Ward, they blew up just after and during COVID. And there's a lot of brands in this type of room that are doing the same thing. But the big boys are there as well. So it's just ever-changing, head on a swivel. AI's coming, so Skynet's coming. I think it's an exciting time for all of us, for sure.
I think, if I can just piggyback on that, I think, ironically, the pandemic is, despite its isolating influence, I think it actually brought, at least in our world, it's what really brought TGN together, the community.
For sure.
And I find that really ironic, but also encouraging, right.
Vijay was doing all Red Bar crews and, you know, the online Red Bar community, and I'm sure you found it as well, it was needed. It was starved of attention. So personalities that want to work, want to do things different, they're going to lead the way. And you guys definitely did that.
Hi, Reza is my name. I'm here from Toronto, originally from Switzerland. Cradle of watch and making and Bilbien. Like, my journey with watches has been kind of backwards. I got more into them when I moved here. And,
okay.
You know, thinking back, I used to take the bus past the Omega factory every day to go to school. So it's all a bit backwards. But my question is more towards the British watch industry. So there's a lot in these past years, Fierce Watches, Christopher Ward coming up. And I feel it's a lot of exciting time. It's a big exciting time happening. Where do you see the British watch industry going?
I've always thought that the industry is the world's and the Swiss just kind of honed it and perfected it, right? But if you look at the trends, French, Italians, Spanish, they always kind of dictated things in terms of how it should look and how it should be worn. Brits did it brilliantly and they kind of went away after World War II, and I think the Germans had the same way because of obvious reasons. But what the German, British, and I think even the Americans, they'll get there in the end if they realize that it doesn't just have to be Swiss. It's amazing. I've obviously worked with for Bremon, which was very much bringing watchmaking home, and I've been around the Alliance, especially now more with Christopher Ward. The appetite is incredible. The ambition is great. And I think the rules are kind of gone in terms of the Swissness. Christopher Ward's different because it's English designed, Swiss made, and we're very clear and we're very proud of it. And, you know, two worlds, and it works beautifully. But when you look at the Alliance and you look at how Mike designs and his design team with Christopher Ward is working, there's no, it has to be this color. It has to be this size. Let's try things. Belcanto is a testament to that. I don't know if anyone in this modern time can do something which was groundbreaking as much as Christopher Ward did with that Belcanto, but everyone's going to give it a go, which is exciting for everybody in here because all the rules are gone and there's no bounds, there's no rules, there's no laws. Just have fun, because I will not wear the same watch every day. It doesn't have to be blue, black, or white. And I think that's what you're finding in this industry, especially from the UK. So,
as a son of Switzerland, what do you think of Swiss Chalet?
He's out.
He did not you give it a nice if you can't
Mike.
See
will
it.
Not go on, Mike.
I've never been either. Oh. I guess
can't
what
eat
I'm
twice
doing
in
tonight.
One day, buddy. I don't know. I don't think I can do it twice.
I've got to have some ketchup chips and.
Ketchup chips are pretty good.
Me and you, two Brummies walking into a bar. What's the punchline there?
All right. We had Rhonda just in the back there.
So my question is, it's a two-parter. First of all, it's an observation. This has been the best weekend. And I go to shows all the time, mm-hmm. all around the world. And just to have it here in Toronto with, you know, friends and family has mm-hmm. been a great honor. So my question is actually for everyone in the audience. Like, did you have a great time so far at the show? Yes. Say it. And for you guys, like, is this sort of meetup, like we talked about the TGN summit, but like this sort of meetup, is this kind of more of a future for than, you know, going to Baselworld or Watches and Wonders?
That's double layered there.
Sure.
For me.
I'll take this. Yeah. I'll take this every day of the week.
And twice
on Sunday. I mean, over Basel World, or there is no Basel World anymore.
Yeah.
You know, Watches and Wonders.
I think the big show is, as you know, insanely important for the Swiss identity of watchmaking. And I think that that identity being strong helps all watchmaking, whether it's from Britain or the States or somebody's basement in Toronto. For Jason and I think when you, especially, like, look, what I'm about to say is a very spoiled position. I've been to Basel World so many times. I've been to, and if I'd never went again, that would probably be okay. I wouldn't, it's not that I would or wouldn't miss it. It's just, if I'm honest, I like this stuff.
It is where you met, though.
Yep. Yeah, that's true. That's the Braemont, true. Yeah. At the Braemont booth in the palace.
Yeah, yeah. But I would say at my side for that, I miss Basel. I love that World Cup final, that Olympic 100 meter medal. I love that we're all together and the whole world was watching it. But I went to, I've been to all types of different Red Bar crews and get-togethers and individual meets. And I, at the start of this year, I went to Washington, D.C., America's capital, and it gets no attention from the watch industry. And we had people waiting an hour to see a watch that they'd never seen before. So there is this patience, there's people that want us to come to them, and it's our job to get there. But I think there's room, to your point about the internet, that we can find a balance for both. But yeah. I do miss the big grandeur a little bit. I do.
I would also say that I think the big shows have to catch up on what some of the small shows bring, which are these touch points, these moments where we get to hang out. It's much more face-to-face. It's much more personal. And look, I think the Swiss are problem solvers. They're really good at throwing an event. They're obviously incredible at making watches. And I think that it's difficult when you want to bring in that many brands to understand what the profile of enthusiasm might be from one brand to another. Because let's say you wanted to do a cool hangout for Rolex. How big a room do they have in Switzerland, right? But pick a different brand. Everything has to be tailored to the enthusiast for that brand. And I think when you start talking about a show that has hundreds of vendors, it becomes a little bit less personal. It becomes a little bit less about enthusiasm and more about, say, business or the news cycle and maybe some of the hype that's tied up to that. Whereas I think you kind of need both sides, like maybe to Mike's analogy with like the Olympics or like the Super Bowl, or you need that. But I think you still need. You need the AAA players that you can see for a normal amount of money, and you know you don't have to deal with flights and all the traffic and the rest of it. And I think this is all, it has to be part of a thriving ecosystem. And I think a lot of us, and I think a lot of you probably feel this way, the last few years has been exciting in the watch game, but it hasn't felt like everybody was thriving.
Yeah.
It kind of felt like things got out of control from the enthusiast side, where it became way more about money than, say, the product or the fascination with the product. And money will always be involved. We're talking about expensive things we don't need. But I think as that starts to rebalance and find a new equilibrium, we should be able to continue to invest into these scenarios and not lose the other side of the coin with the big shows.
I don't have to wear a tie anymore, so that's good.
Oh, thank goodness.
Please no ties.
No, never ties. And I had the worst blisters of my life at my first Basel. So you learn those lessons to now just be comfortable. So I like this more.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great. Any other questions before we shut it down? We got one more.
Hi, Alvin. I had the opportunity to say hello earlier today in the show. Just for the benefit of the listeners at home, can we get a wrist check for the panel up there?
Absolutely.
Oh,
Mike, you want to go first?
I never do this, but I'm double wristing.
Whoa!
Oh, I know. Oh. Every time I wear, well, most days I wear my Bronze Pro 300. It is very patinaed because I'm a sweaty Englishman living in Texas. But I wanted to show that. But we just launched the new Lumiere. And so I put it on a strap just to kind of show that. It's beautiful. So thank you.
Yeah, people should go check that watch out. Yeah. That's a cool, cool release. Yeah, just moving, I guess, left to right as you face us. I've got the Jumbo Day-Date Automatic from Marathon. It's a watch that I took diving about a month ago for a bit of a photo project, and I've been wearing it quite a bit since then. And we're doing an event tonight with Marathon, so I thought I'd come proper. So
yeah, we're gonna go drink some beer and eat some meats and cheeses, I hope, and that sort of thing with Marathon. I'm wearing my Marathon, a watch I've had for a little while now. It's the SS Nav D, so it's the steel version of the Navigator, and I've got it on the green of their rubber strap. And if you're doing another lap before you head out for the day or you come back tomorrow, don't skip on these straps. It's a pretty impressive rubber strap. That's what I've got on. And a good question, and thank you so much for finding us an easy way to close the show. Everybody, thank you so much for coming and hanging out. We couldn't be more thankful, Mike, and to everybody else who came up and chit-chatted with us. Love you all so much.
I got one.
And we'll leave you with this quote delivered by Mike Pearson.
I speak to a lot of people all over the world and I never get nervous. I'm not nervous. I'm a little emotional. And if I'm honest with you about being here, you're my closest friends in the industry. So I'll leave you with this quote. There are no strangers here, only friends you haven't met yet. And I'm glad you did.
That's great job, man.